Pilot and author Lane Wallace writes in her book, Surviving Uncertainty, "The first thing that hits me is the silence. Silence as profound and unbroken as the field of ice and snow stretching out in front of me. 11,000 feet, I am up in the French Alps. The jagged rock peaks of Petit and Grand Fourche jut up sharply behind me, and it's chilly in the shadows of the early morning air. I look around from my precarious foothold on the steep slope of the rough glacial ice, and a second thought begins to sink in. I am completely and utterly alone. No companions, no distant climbers in sight, no other humans or mammals as far as the eye can see. Just ice, snow, and jagged rocky pinnacles rimming a frozen expanse of white. I look down and a third thought registers. I'm wearing tennis shoes. Shorts, a t-shirt, a light fleece jacket, and tennis shoes. Dear God, how did I get here? 5 minutes earlier, I had been comfortably ensconced in the left seat of a small mountain ski plane, taking some instructions from an expert flight instructor. Since the morning conditions were so nice, he asked if I'd like to try landing on one of the alpine glaciers high up on the Mount Blanc range. And I said, sure. We circled over the landing site, checked the winds, and came around to land. The plan was to land uphill, turn 180 degrees, and take off again downhill. But in the shadows of Grand Fourche, the icy snow gripped more tightly than I expected. We began the turn, but the skis got stuck in the snow halfway through the turn. After a couple of unsuccessful attempts to free the plane from the ice, the instructor leaned over and opened my half of the canopy. I need your help, he said, over the noise of the running engine. Go to the wingtip and push back as I add full power. That should rotate us, but once the plane turns, I don't have brakes, so I'm going to have to take off. Make your way down to the tracks, way down the hill. He gestured to some tracks further down the glacier, where the slope was shallower and the snow was in the sun. And I'll come back and pick you up there. I did think to grab a fleece jacket as I nodded and climbed out of the plane, but focused on the needs of the mission, I didn't take anything else. I climbed gingerly off the plane's low wing and made my way carefully around the down slope wing until I was at the front edge of the wingtip. The ice was thick this morning, I noted as I kicked two toe holes through the crusty surface to give me some traction to push against. I leaned into the wing as the instructor ran up the engine and the plane started to shift. I ducked under the wing as it pivoted sharply toward me, turning in time to see the plane lifting off and heading out toward the lower end of the glacier. I watched the red and white ski plane get small in the distance, the sound of its retreating engine quickly swallowed by the vast, uninhabited silence of the glacier and its surrounding mountain peak, and surrounding mountain peaks. And there I was, standing in the midst of all that majestic snow, rock, and ice, alone. I was drawn to this article because I have an interest in aviation. And she had written this article for Flying Magazine, and it was entitled Uncertain Storms. And this was a speech that she had to give to a group of aviators at an aviation conference. And this group was representing an industry that was particularly hard hit by the current economic crisis. It was being characterized as being frivolous. And to further make it tougher, it was in Michigan, which is a state that has the highest unemployment rate. And she wanted to be positive in her words, and she finally came upon the idea that pilots, in particular, are suited for these circumstances because they're constantly dealing with uncertainty. And as I thought about this, I also thought about other fields. I know Bruce is a sailor, and I'm sure he's sailed to Hawaii a few times, and I'm sure he can tell you about how uncertain things sometimes are. And just recently in the paper, we learned of he was 16 years old when he started, boy that lives in Thousand Oaks, and he set out in June of last year to sail around the world by himself. And this month, he came into Marina Del Rey. It took him 13 months to sail around the world. But he completed this task, and I wonder, what kind of unexpected problems did he encounter? How did he deal with the stress of being out there alone, dealing with broken masts? He had other problems, whereas he was ran across pirates. How did he deal with these things? They're uncertain. Here's a young man out there by himself. But as I read these stories and I think about these things, you know, life is a gift that has been given to each of us. And it seems that over the course of the last 25 years, we become accustomed to life being certain. We think that life is always going to be good. We think that economic times are going to be easy and things are going to go along smoothly. The reason this occurred to me is because, as many of you know, I have an affection for the young adults. I have a son that's 21, just turned 21. And it's interesting to me how people of his generation think about life and how they view things. And it has occurred to me that part of the issue is that in his friend's lifetime, what difficulties have there been? Life has been good. Money has been easy to come by. Jobs, all you have to do is go out and apply for a job and you can have a job. Things have always been easy. But the reality is, certainty in life is just an illusion. It's not something that is true. It is something that we hope for. It is something that we want. In the past 20 years, it's something that we've come to expect, but it really is truly is an illusion. Because even in these good times, there is uncertainty. I was talking to a woman at the gym this last week whose son-in-law, 47 years old, had been diagnosed with melanoma throughout his body. The thing that made it tragic was 3 years ago, he had gone to the doctor. The doctor had looked at whatever it was he was pointing to and said, "I wouldn't worry about it." A year later, he changed insurance and went to a different doctor. The doctor looked at it and says, "I don't like the way this looks." And he biopsied it and it found it was melanoma. I have a client that I ran into, his wife this last week, and I discovered that he had been off work for 3 weeks because in a physical he had been determined he had a lump on his brain behind his ear. For him, it turned out good because it was benign. The surgeons had the skills to remove it, and the only thing he lost was his hearing, which he said was on his wife's side in the car, so it didn't bother him anyways. But the point is, certainty is an illusion. Life can change at any moment. As the story about Lane Wallace on the glacier shows. But we can do several things with this uncertainty. We can pretend that it's not happening. We can turn our back on it. Or we can expect someone else to face this problem for us and take care of things. In the story of Esther, we can learn a lot from this young woman and from her cousin Mordecai. You know, Persia at this time in history was the strongest nation in the world. They had been in control for quite some time. And it was a nation that had been very good to the Hebrew people. Because we know that when the Babylonians came in and sacked Jerusalem and sacked Judah, they took the people away with them. And they weren't cruel to them. They took their best and their brightest and they fed them and they put them in positions where they could learn the Babylonian culture, the Persian culture, and they could have a positive influence on that culture. So this culture was good to the Hebrew people. At this time that Esther is written, the king had allowed people to go back to Jerusalem, the city they had destroyed. He allowed them to return there and to rebuild the walls of the city, to rebuild that life that they once had. But life was so good in Persia at the time that a lot of the Hebrew people didn't leave. They had established businesses. They had families. They had grown up here. In fact, we learn that in chapter 2 and verse 10 that the Hebrew people were so integrated that when she went to try to become the queen, she didn't even say anything about what her heritage was. And obviously, I mean, apparently it wasn't obvious that she was a Hebrew person because it was not something that she talked about and that Mordecai told her not to disclose. And we know that it must have been good for the Hebrew people because she became the queen. She became the queen. And as Mordecai came, though, from this, I should back up a little bit. We know that the problem was that there was an enemy within the courts. Haman was one that did not like the Hebrew people. He specifically didn't like Mordecai. And he conned the king into allowing the Hebrew people to be persecuted. And Mordecai was concerned about this, so he approached Esther. Because Esther had a position where she could influence the king. But Esther was not convinced that that was something that she should do. She discussed with Mordecai through her servants that no one was allowed to approach the king unless they were asked to come in. If they approached the king and the king did not hold out the golden scepter to them, the punishment was death. And Esther points this out to her cousin, Mordecai. So she had fears. She was afraid that maybe, even though she was the queen, that she would not be accepted. But Esther also had a trusted advisor. Her cousin Mordecai was someone that she could trust. And Mordecai counseled her in how she should respond. So Esther was at a crossroad. She had a decision to make. Was she going to approach the king and try to rescue her people? Or was she going to leave them to their own? Mordecai had told her that he felt that she would not survive if she did not do this for her people. But going to the king would have produced immediate results. She would have known right away if her life was going to last much longer or not. But if she decided to put it off, perhaps God would find another way to save his people. Both directions possibly led to death. One gave her more time and perhaps a better solution. But Esther chose to let God use her. She chose to let God guide her, to let God make the decision. And the question is, are we strong enough to make this same choice? Do we drift along and hope that better things will come? Do we wait around and hope that someone else will do the job? Or will we make the choice to see if God will support us? Do we have Esther's confidence in our relationship with God? Are you confident that God will support you in the actions that you take? Are the actions that I'm taking worth the support of God? And the other question is where you are in your life today for no purpose? Is there a purpose for you in your life today? Mordecai points out that maybe she became queen just for this very moment. A moment when she could rescue her people. A moment when God could use her to change the course of history. Does my life have a purpose? And we can say the same thing about her cousin Mordecai. Because Mordecai took responsibility for his orphaned cousin. When her parents died, her parents were killed, he took her in. He raised her. He supported her. He encouraged her to trust God in her life. It's not always easy. Unfortunately, probably in most of my lifetime, we've come to expect certain things. We've come to expect a certain amount of consistency. We expect the church to always be here. We expect our fellow Christians to be here as well. There's a certain amount of things that we just expect. But is there any reality in my expectations? Could that change tomorrow? Could it change today? Am I just speaking doom and gloom? Or is there a reality to the fact that certainty is an illusion? But I think that if we are to continue the work here, that we must work at growing in our confidence and our trust in God. We must begin to take responsibility for our own actions. Because I can't expect you to do it. I have to do it myself. I have to hope that God, pray that God is going to support me. I have to make sure that I am doing what God wants me to do. because I am certain, as with Esther, he has put me in this place for a purpose. I think many times in the church today, we are living off the legacy of our fathers. It was a unique experience for me not too long ago when my dad was here and he had his hip replacement. I accused him of wanting to come back and make my brother Gary and my life a little miserable. I always thought that maybe he was, I had certain illusions about him, I guess, and the way he would be. But as it turned out, my father is a far stronger man than I had ever anticipated. But the one thing that really impressed me about him was for the 3 days he spent in the hospital and for the 4 days he spent down here at the Venturin being rehabilitated, learning to walk and put his socks on and do the things that so many of us take for granted. Every person that he came in contact, whether it was a therapist, whether it was the nurse that came in, whether it was the person that came in to clean the room or clean the bathroom, whatever, they all knew one thing about my father, and that was he was a man of Christ. He was a follower of Christ. And why did they know that? He didn't have a badge upon his shirt. He told them. He even got me in a conversation with a therapist about coming to church. He was speaking highly of us here, about how we were not a closed-minded group, but that we were accepting, because we all knew that we were sinners. We would be accepting of him and his wife. Now, the young man never showed up, but that's not the point. The point is that man knew my father was a Christian, and he also knew that he was concerned about that man's well-being and soul. And as I thought about that in the months since he's gone, sadly, I can't say the same thing about myself. Stephen Pressfield, who is a historical writer, one of the books he wrote was called The Afghan Campaign. And it has to do with the country of Afghanistan. But it's not a recent story. It's a story about a soldier, a particular soldier that served in the army of Alexander the Great. Now, Alexander the Great lived before the years were measured in BC, whatever that stands for. We always say before Christ, but I don't think that's what it is. I think it's a Latin term, but if Rob was here, he probably could, since he's a doctor, would know the Latin. But needless to say, it was a long time ago. And Alexander the Great tried to conquer Afghanistan, and he failed. Recently, I had the pleasure of listening to Stephen Pressfield talk about the country of Afghanistan. And the thing that impressed me about what he was saying was that the Afghanis have never truly been conquered. And they've been around a long time. But the reason why is because in Afghanistan, you're not raised to be a farmer. You're not raised to be a merchant. You were not raised to do anything but be a warrior. Afghanis are raised to be warriors, and they've been that way for generation after generation after generation. And it struck me as being important because the thing about a warrior is they can't be compromised. They can't be bought out. They can't be made to turn against their fellow warrior. They are a warrior. And that's all they are. And it reminded me of the song we used to sing, and maybe some of you little kids can remember this song, where it says, "I am in the Lord's army." And you all remember that song. I may never march in the infantry, ride in the cavalry, shoot the artillery. I may never fly over the enemy, but I'm in the Lord's army. And it reminded me that I, from a little kid, was trained to be a warrior. But somewhere along the line, I lost that warrior mentality. I became soft, like those around me. Because the problem is, growth is work. It takes effort. It takes something inside of us to maintain that edge and to want to grow each day. And I want to point out today a couple people that I'm proud of, that I respect a lot. And one is Paul Vider. You know, it's interesting because one of the things that scares a lot of people are kids. We can be afraid of middle school kids. But it truly is intimidating to some people. But Paul, after much angst, decided to take on a class teaching the middle school kids. And I was so thankful that he would do that. And that someone would take it for a quarter. But the thing is, Paul's been in there almost a year now. And we can't seem to pry him loose from the class. Another person, I don't even know if he's here, is Gary Chenault. But Gary took on teaching the high school class. You know, and this is an amazing thing because Gary is retired from as a policeman. You know, and what is a policeman? He carries a gun. He talks to bad guys. And he's afraid of high school kids. But I understand because it's a responsibility to try and do that. And I'm thankful that Gary decided to take a shot at it. And I think that's been a positive experience for him. But regardless, it was a growing experience that he won't forget. And I'm sure he can use it in his daily walk with Christ. The point is, we need to get back to our warrior roots. We have become soft. We have decided that things are going to stay consistent. But we know today, if you read the paper, if you turn on the radio, that things are no longer certain. Economy is uncertain. And people would say the future is uncertain. But I want to tell you something. It's not. Tomorrow will change, and there will lots of things that will change. Maybe our economic situation will change. Maybe one of us will lose our jobs. Maybe one of us will become sick. Maybe one of us will lose a family member or somebody that's important. Maybe one of us will have to move away. But the thing that won't change is God. And God has promised us that He will be with us, as He was with Esther, as He was with Mordecai. And if we take on the challenge to do what we know we should do, God will support it, and He will be with us. But it's important that we take that chance. You know, not too long ago, in fact, it's been the first part of this month, I had the... I happened to be there when my son and two of his friends, Parker, who's here, and I don't know if Jeff's here tonight, but three of them jumped out of an airplane together with parachutes. But I believe that they were certain that when they jumped out, that one thing was going to happen, that the parachute was going to open. And they were going to land safely. Has it ever happened that someone jumped out of a plane and the parachute didn't open? Has it ever happened? But I believe that they felt that their parachute would open. And as their parent, I was pretty confident too, I guess. And although I don't know what I could have done to stop them anyways. But they jumped out of a plane. And I think that they were believing that the parachute was going to open. And it did in their cases. Thank God for that. But you know, there's going to be times in their lives when the parachute's not going to be there. There's going to be times in our own lives when we question the moves that we make. It is important that each day we study. It is important each day that we step out of the comfort zone that we're in. I read a book here recently. I tried to find this morning so I could give... say who it was from and give a proper, I can't even think of the word now. Anyways, give them credence for writing it. But it had to do with church growth. As the leaders of this congregation attend those meetings, one of the things that's concerned for us is the growth of the church. And it's a common thing. If you read the Christian Chronicle, churches all over are concerned about growth. But this one book pointed out that in many ways, we've lost our roots. You know, it's just like my dad speaking to people about his own belief, his own faith, the way he lived his own life. Do we do that anymore? When was the last time, and I'm speaking to myself, folks, I'm not trying, and this is embarrassing, but when was the last time I had a Bible study with anybody? When was the last time anybody wanted to have a Bible study with me? You know, we talk about the growth of the church, but the people we baptize generally are our own children. The growth that we have are people that are coming from other areas where the church is downsizing or has disappeared. And they come here so they can have a place to be. And that's not bad. I don't want to downplay that at all. But are we reaching out into the community around us? Last week I was able to privilege to worship with a church in El Cajon. We've been there several times, and I love going there because it's an extremely dynamic congregation. But there was a flyer that was handed out, and it talked about visitors. We're concerned about church growth, but we have visitors every Sunday. How do we respond to them? After services, after the closing prayer, we divide up. We talk about the things we always talk about, the people we always talk about it with. Do we ever meet those people that are visiting? In closing, I want to read the words of a song by Casting Crowns. They're written by a gentleman by the name of Mark Hall. And it speaks to this idea of living our lives for God. On taking a chance, as Esther did, in approaching the king, taking a chance of not only just being rejected, because being rejected, what does that hurt? If you've ever telemarketed, you know what rejection is. But what is rejection? What does that hurt us? But what is important in our lives? Anyways, the words of the song, Father, hear my prayer. I need the perfect words that he will hear. And know that they're straight from you. I don't know what to say. I only know it hurts to see my only friends slowly fade away. So maybe this time I'll speak the words of life with your fire in my eyes. But that old familiar fear is tearing at my words. What am I so afraid of? Because here I go again, talking about the rain and mulling over things that won't live past today. And as I dance around the truth, time is not his friend. This might be the last chance to tell him that you love him. But here I go again. Here I go again. Lord, you love him so. You gave your only son. If he will just believe, he will never die. But how then will he know what he has never heard? Lord, he has never seen mirrored in my life. This might be the last chance to tell him that you love him. This might be the last chance to tell him that you love him. What am I so afraid of? Here we go again. In a moment, we're going to sing the song, the invitation song. It's titled, Where He Leads, Where He Leads Me, I Will Follow. Is that true? Are we willing to follow Christ? Are we wanting someone else to do it? Are we willing to take the chance? So many times our lives end up as muddled messes. We have people that are close to us that don't know who God is. Well, we know most Americans believe in God. Most even believe in Christ. But what does that mean? What does that mean to me? What does that mean for me? Am I letting someone else do it, or am I willing to take the stand? Like Esther, am I willing to step out and say, in prayer, I will do it. I will take a chance. I will talk about what is important. I will not let this day go by and rely upon somebody else. But I will do it. If today is the day when you want to make a commitment to Christ? The first step is hard. The first step is difficult. But when we make that decision, it opens up new doors. It opens up new chances. And it really gets us into what is important in our life. Not the weather. Not cars, although cars are fun. Not anything else, but what is important? What is lasting? What is life changing? Because certainty is just an illusion. We don't know what we have tomorrow. We don't know how many days we have. We don't know how many years we have. But this is a life-changing thing. If we can help you with prayers, if we can help you with baptism, if we can help you with anything, if you just come down front while we sing this invitation song, we'll help you as Christian family and friends. Please.